You're listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
What's up, friends? It's Adam. This is The Conversation. I hope you are doing well. I'm doing well because you are tuning in with me. And hey, it has been so cool to hear from so many of you over the last few weeks connecting with the different episodes. A couple of weeks ago, we had the episode around sex, which, by the way, is the most downloaded episode to date. And then last week with the legendary Philip Yancey, I'm so grateful that his story connected with many of you as well. But today's episode is with Ruth Jo Simons. She is an artist. She is an author, a business leader. She's married. She is the mom of six boys. I cannot imagine. I have four kids, three of which are boys. I cannot imagine six boys, but gosh, our conversation with her was so good. We talked about striving after work stuff, after life stuff, instead of resting in Jesus. That's something I struggle with myself. I also had my friend Heidi with on the conversation, and she asked Ruth about being a mom and how to wrestle with and how to juggle being a mom and all the different struggles that come with that. Just in general, what a wise person, what a wise woman Ruth is. I am so excited for you to hear this conversation. So as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation. Ruth, huge honor to connect with you today. I want to welcome you to the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
For someone who doesn't know your story, I'm just going to let you share just kind of who are you in a nutshell.
I'm Ruth Jo Simons. I'm coming to you from Western Colorado. I am married to my husband, Troy. We've been married for 23 years. In the past seasons, he's been a pastor as well as a headmaster of a classical Christian school. So our background has always been in ministry. But in this particular season of life, we are all in with gracelace.com, a website I began, oh gosh, it's been like 13, 14 years ago now, where I was really just trying to discover God's grace in my everyday life in a season when I was having my six young boys. And now my oldest is 19 and my youngest is 8.
Thank you so much for sharing the high points of you, who you are. And I know we're going to get to the six boy thing at some point. So you have this new book coming out, When Striving Cease. Where did this book come from inside of you? And what's your greatest hope from the book as a whole?
Yeah. You know, this is the kind of the untold story of what has caused the grace of God to be the cornerstone of my ministry and who I am. And I've really never had a chance to share the fact that I was born in Taiwan, Taipei, Taiwan. I am an immigrant, Asian American gal who grew up between two cultures. And if you've ever been around Asian American culture, you might have experienced some of the high value placed on honor and performance and academics and really being the very best. And so I spent most of my life really allowing the idea of achieving and performing and not ever disappointing someone be the very thing that would shape and mold me, so afraid that I wouldn't belong or wouldn't have approval. And that ultimately made it so difficult to even understand the gospel, because the gospel is God saying, you have nothing to offer. I will do everything to rescue you. I want so badly for other sisters in Christ and the men as well, for all of us to come alongside in this generation to not just gloss over that and be like, yeah, grace, that sweet, wonderful thing. We're so grateful, grace upon grace. And we say those things, but we're really living like we don't have enough, that we need to get to the next tier of success, that even within Christendom, we're somehow like hustling for notoriety so that we can make an impact for the kingdom, so we say. But where in that are we missing that the gospel is the one thing, not self-help, not self-improvement, not the next webinar. The gospel is meant to transform our lives. And if we really believe that as the church, would we need so badly every best-selling book out there giving you a strategy for turning your life around? And I'd say those are good tools, but until believers start really taking Jesus at his word and really seeing the gift of grace as the only means for our rescue, we're going to be in a perpetual cycle of self-improvement and performance.
Yeah. So Ruth, for you, was there pivotal moments that that process began. I know one of the things you talk about in the book is no matter how amazing you are, you still need grace.
There was a moment in my collegiate years where under good teaching through Matthew 5, I finally kind of wrestled with the Sermon on the Mount. I heard it before in Sunday school. I'd heard it before at VBS because my family came to faith towards the end of my middle school year. So I didn't grow up in a Christian home, but later on. But still, I heard those stories. But it wasn't until college that it kind of hit me that I was like, oh, that's what Jesus means when he says, you think you've obeyed the law to this point, but if you even do this, if you even lust, if you even speak hatefully towards somebody, that's murder. Like, and you just kind of, whenever somebody reads that passage, you have to stop and kind of go like, what, you know? And then if you don't really wrestle with it, you miss the whole point. The whole point is no matter how hard you try with man-made formulas for holiness and performance and trying to arrive at making God pleased with you, until you accept that Jesus has to be the one, he's the only one who's ever been sinless and perfect, and he's the only one who can reconcile you to God. Unless you reconcile that with your own life, that's why you never feel enough. Like, that's why, you know, women these days like to, you know, there's a lot of memes going around saying, you are enough, you are enough. And a lot of times that's just our culture's way of trying to make sure that our self-esteem stays afloat or whatever. But the reality is, as believers, if we're being biblical about it, we welcome the answer that we are not enough. Only Jesus can make us enough. And so I would love for our generation to stop asking the question, am I enough, and start declaring that Jesus truly is. But we're not going to get there until we stop thinking that we're the fix and we're the hero and we're the ones who can get holy enough on our own. And so that was probably one of the moments for me, Adam.
Yeah. Anytime I see one of those pictures of you are enough, I'm like, am I the only one who's not enough? Because I clearly am not enough, but Jesus is. Let's talk about Jesus being enough. And so I'm always amazed. I'm like, I'm so grateful that I'm not enough, but he is. Practical advice to someone who's struggling with still performing in their relationship with God and doesn't feel, I mean, they might have the right theology in their brain, but not in their soul. And just practical advice to that person.
Here's the thing. This is not a one and done. It's not like for somebody who's listening going, yeah, I don't want to be a striver. I don't want to be a performer and a hustler all the time. I want to be changed by Jesus. It's not like you're going to read my book and suddenly that's the last time you'll ever have to wrestle with this. Just like preaching truth to yourself, it is a daily thing that you have to squash your flesh and say, by the grace of God, I'm going to turn away from my natural propensity to save myself. And I'm going to receive once again today that he is King. He is Lord of my life. So some practical ways, I'll just tell you ways that keep me aligned is that for one thing, I go outside a lot because I spend a lot of time being amazed by God. I have to, and I'm not trying to be all like weird, like Jack Handy, deep thoughts kind of way about it. I mean, I'm really just saying, if you catch a sunset, if you take the time to notice what God's created, because we're staring at our phones all day long and we're really impressed with ourselves. And I've said this before in my previous book with Beholding and Becoming, where I tiptoed on that in that topic with devotional things. But as a practical help, I would say anyone who's a creative and a creator, a podcaster, a minister, a business owner, an artist, whatever it is where you are constantly creating and trying to produce things, give yourself ample opportunities to rest from that production and be amazed by how God has accomplished everything on your behalf. And that's one way every day for me to actually reset and say, okay, I turn off my phone, I turn off notifications, I don't keep working. Because like Piper said, when you go to sleep at night, it's kind of declaring that God is God and you are not.
Yes.
You know, like that's what you're saying. The world doesn't need me. I can go, like God doesn't need me to run everything. I can go to sleep now. And so I think rest is a huge part of it for those of us who are achiever types, for us who are overcoming the striving mentality. Really sit with that and wrestle with that. It's not up to you. And so there's so much pressure every day for us to be the ones who come up with the right thing, create the right content, whatever it is. Preach the right sermon on a Sunday morning for pastors, right? Whatever it is, you have to step back and go, I'm not the originator. Like, I am not the one. God purposely made the point, and let the Apostle Paul tell it really clearly, that you have nothing. You didn't do any of this. This is all God. And so we in 2021, I think we need a reminder that it's still all God. And I think that helps us reset every day. So maybe on a practical level, I would say, be in awe of God, learn how to rest, and visit familiar passages in the Bible and stop acting like it's old news.
Oh gosh, that last part is so good. A similar question, but one I think is so important. Right now, so many people, men and women, are struggling with anxiety and being anxious like never before. Even myself included, this morning I woke up and for whatever reason just was anxious. Just Ruth, your words to that person. How does God's grace calm our anxiety?
So I would say to him, you know what? I'm included. So I am not somebody who has it all figured out. I have to like literally pray in the middle of the night when my heart starts beating fast and I wake up for no reason and I'm anxious. I'm going, why am I anxious? Yeah. Lord, does this mean I'm not a Christian? Like you start kind of weirding out, like why am I stressing out in the middle of the night? You know, so what I would say to you, and I might say and preach to myself, is that when you start with your greatest fear and your greatest anxiety, whatever that is right now, if you're listening, like identify and figure out what that is that's causing you the greatest anxiety, and then trace your way back from that anxiety and go, what is it that you think you will not have if you don't get that right? Okay, so maybe it's the house payment, or it's finding a spouse. Maybe it's having people like your work. I don't know what it is. You know, whatever it is, your children being obedient. Take that thing that's making you anxious and trace your way back and go, is it that you're afraid you're not going to have approval? Is it afraid that you're not going to find love? Is it afraid that people are going to reject you? Whatever it is, go all the way back to the beginning of what it is that you're afraid you're not going to have, because that, I promise there's something there that's causing that anxiety. And I promise God has an answer for how he will meet that need better than you actually achieving that thing you're anxious for. So the reality is, whatever we're anxious for, we think it's about a change in circumstances. We think it's about just being able to get our kids back in school after COVID is all over. We think it's about just arriving at the next level of scaling our business so we don't feel at risk. We think it's about getting people back in church because we've been working so hard at ministry. Those are all valid things that we can be concerned about. But the anxiety that comes with it is tied to the striving that ultimately declares that we don't actually trust God to do what we think our striving will produce. And so we have to start with saying striving will never produce what God intends to gift to us. So that's where we're going to have to face our anxieties.
That is so good. Again, the book is called When Striving Cease. Ruth, I want to kind of shift the conversation and talk about some other things. I know this came up from my assistant, actually, just the artist and creative you are. It sounds like one day you randomly just started painting flowers all over the walls of your house. And she's like, I want Ruth to come to my house and paint flowers all over my house. But specifically with just art and being a creative, what aspect of that has brought you closer to God? I think art is often something we don't talk about in the church and don't talk about as Christians, which is so bizarre when we follow the creator of the heavens and the earth. How have you seen that connect?
Well, we're the Imago Dei, right? Yeah. We are the image bearers. We are made, each one of us, with different giftings and different skills. We are all made to reflect God's glory. And some might reflect through dancing. Some might reflect through singing. Some might reflect through proclamation. And some might reflect by reflecting literally what they see. And a lot of times I'm just inspired by the very things that surround me, the things that, back to the start of this broadcast, the things that remind me that he is God and I am not. And that's really what I love to paint. So you'll find that I paint a lot of botanicals, flora, fauna, things like that. And just to clarify with those who might think that I overnight became quite a success through artwork, I would just say there was a good decade where nobody knew who I was on Instagram. I was doing artistic things behind the scenes that nobody knew. I was painting paintings and donating them to silent auctions locally at churches and schools. And nobody knew that on social media. But, you know, here's the thing. And I was writing a lot on a blog that nobody really read. And the thing I just want to say real quick here for all those who might be let's say, striving in those areas in their lives, trying to be somebody, do that one thing with their one life that will be really impactful, I would just say, be faithful right where you are and don't try to be the one who creates the fruit. Let God do that and just be faithful. If you want to be somebody who can impact the world with your writing or your artwork or your podcasting or your preaching, start doing it with one person. Do it right with your kids at the kitchen table. That's how I started. I started doing art with my kids and with the women in my church and people in my life. And ultimately, God used that. So just as I want to demystify this and so that nobody thinks that social media in itself will project somebody into success when the truth is you just have to be faithful and do the work.
Well, so often I think we see people that we think are overnight successes. Mm-hmm. And there has been so much work. So, you know, it's like I have been faithful, been running when no one but God himself was watching me. Mm-hmm. I've just been faithful. That's true. And that's what God ends up using.
Yeah.
I just had a question about, so I have three boys and you have six boys and just, I have just really been mentored through your, social media and just your encouragement with being faithful. And, I guess my question is when it doesn't feel like anything is happening, what can you say to encourage moms who are just trying to hang on?
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing I've learned in motherhood is that I am such a project person. I'd like to know where I'm trying to aim, hit it, and be like, and we nailed it. We're done.
Yes.
And I tend to want to think about our children that way. Like if I give you one chart for how to put away your clothes, I should never have to say this again. Or if we have one big conversation about how to do conflict resolution between you boys, I should never have to do this again. You guys should never have to yell at one another again. And so the discouragement as moms sometimes comes because we go, why do I have to keep doing the same thing over and over again? Why is it so exhausting? And I'm not seeing change, or I'm not seeing progress. And I guess my encouragement would be that sometimes I look at my relationship with the Lord and I wonder how patient he is with me. And I wonder how much he's like, wow, I showed Ruth that one time that I am faithful, more faithful than she possibly could understand and know. How she's doubting me again? Or, wow, that one time she really prayed over this and I gave her a really clear answer. How come she's praying like I'm not going to answer this time? And so the reality is my relationship with God shows that he's a patient father who continually, just over and over again, demonstrates the reality of his rescue. And so as moms, our number one job is not to fix our kids or to make them perfect. Our number one job is to daily be a living testimony of grace at work. So if that means that you are wrestling with reading your Bible, confess it to your kids and say, I struggle with reading my Bible myself. I need Jesus to come transform my desire for his word. Let's do this together. Or if you're yelling, rather than hide in the corner and be like, I'm not fit to be a mom until I figure this out, you fall on your knees before your kids and say, I'm so sorry, guys, that I yelled at you today. You didn't deserve that. And I serve a God who deserves my holiness and that I should say thank you through my like reverence to him. And I was just revving the whole show right now with my mouth. And so I am sorry, guys. I'm sorry. And Lord, change me. And that kind of testimony and display before your kids won't produce something quick. It's not like they're suddenly going to be like, and I'm going to be a missionary because my mom's so amazing. No, it's going to be that they actually stop and they say, well, if I'm doubting right now, or if I don't want to read my Bible, at least I know it was true for my mom. At least I know that it was real and I saw her wrestle and it wasn't fake and it wasn't cheesy and she didn't hide the real parts of her walk with Jesus. And so at the end of the day, whether your kids get straight A's or put away their laundry perfectly, your number one job is to Deuteronomy 6 them, right? Is to ultimately speak of the good that God has done all day long in every single season and every moment. And I think that's how we persevere in it.
Ruth, if you wanted to share a little bit more, just like how you have you've shared so much even right in that answer there, as far as growing their love for Jesus or what it looks like to parent in a way that's pleasing to God.
Wow, that's a loaded question. And, you know, my husband and I wrote a book called Foundations that came out last year. And we do have a single season podcast that goes with it, just because we don't really get to talk about parenting very often. But it's, you know, 12 biblical truths to shape a family. And the reason why I bring that up is just to say, I think it starts with us. If we want foundations for our kids and we want to train our kids to love the Lord or demonstrate that, you can't give them something you don't have. And so you can wake up every day and go, I told you, you need to like read your Bible first thing in the morning. Or why are you not being forgiving to one another? But if you can't even like actually do that yourself and you're not like living that out before them, if it's not, doesn't start with you, then all those words fall flat. So good foundation in the home and as parents, whether you're a single parent or you're in a broken family or whatever you're going through, it can start with you. No matter what, we can always take responsibility for ourselves. Even if your husband's not leading or your church family isn't reaching out, whatever it is that you're struggling with right now, you can start today with you and the Lord and whoever's in your care, whoever's in your immediate sphere of influence, whether you're a teacher, a parent, or grandparent, that those people will benefit because you invested in your relationship with the Lord.
That's so good. Ruth, I want to go back to something you mentioned at the start. Growing up, really experiencing two different cultures, what unique perspective or richness do you feel like you gained from that perspective? How did that shape you in different ways?
My own father, I love him, and he is now a believer after those initial years. But he's a quiet, stoic man, as a lot of Asian fathers are, as well as just a lot of fathers in general. And I think sometimes when you are raised around somebody who's not asking you to sit on his lap, who's not real tender, who's not trying to pull out the deepest things in your heart, you can kind of forget what it means to cry, Abba, Father. It may be really hard to understand what it means that you can say that to God, who wants us to draw near, who wants to be our Abba Father, who is about being tender and sheltering, who says his wings are the shelter that you can go cuddle under, right? What does that mean?
Yeah.
How does that make sense to somebody who doesn't experience that, even if love is shown through provision and care, but love may not feel tangible in that sense? And so I think a unique perspective for me is that I really had to really stop thinking that the only way I could understand God was by looking around at people around me. I had to really go to the Word and actually believe that His Word is His Word to me, and not just some manual for living, but that it's actually His voice. And I think being raised between two cultures has caused me to recognize that there's no, if I want to tell somebody about Jesus, I need to listen first where they're coming from. And I need to recognize what kind of baggage they might be carrying culturally, what framework they might be experienced through family and heritage. Because if you meet me, you will have to reckon with the fact that I didn't necessarily feel very accepted or loved growing up. I was rejected by all the school kids I went to school with who thought my language and my food was disgusting and weird. And so, you know, that's the part of my story that will shape and help you understand that me coming to understand the Lord and what He has to offer and what citizenship in heaven means and what belonging to the family of God really means, that's pretty significant. And it's a really long journey to understand that when you're not raised in a very complementary environment. And so I think it's shaped me, but it also has given me probably some kind of empathy and an understanding that the Western church isn't the only picture of what the gospel looks like and how it's lived out. In fact, it's just one fraction of it. And so we, if we want to reach people globally.
Yeah. Share more about that. Share more about that if you would. Like,
well, you know, I mean, I definitely won't claim any expertise considering I've really lived in the U.S. since I was 3 years old, you know, and I haven't ministered for extensive times overseas. So I won't claim to be an expert in any way except to say I think we miss something when we think that all music should sound a certain way or all order of service should look a certain way. I remember even when I was serving in New York City, actually it was it was Queens that I had spent a summer serving with a church there that met in the basement of an apartment complex. And it was really melting pot, multi-generational, multicultural. And that church service went like 5 hours long. And the Western side of me was like, guys, an hour and a half and we're off to lunch. Like, what is going on here? You know, like, we don't do it this way. Like, why is somebody still talking? Like, stop, you know, like, that lunch reservation is waiting, you know, and that's the Western in me. But the reality is a lot of Asian churches, like I grew up in a Chinese church that ultimately, they didn't run away right after church. They didn't, weren't off to their busy lives and mowing their lawns. We stuck around and had lunch together and everybody brought food together. It was very communal. And so I think there's just something to learn from other cultures and recognize that, you know, when I think about Asian culture and how communal it is, there's a downside to that in that sometimes it's hard to be an individual and hard to recognize that you don't just fall into the collective, but sometimes it's communal in terms of empathy and recognizing that we're meant to be the body together. And the Western church could take notes on that a little bit.
You know? Yeah, that is so good. I can remember the first time I really began to see just the differences in culture. In seminary, at one point, all of my neighbors were international students, and just being able to see glimpses of who they were and the way that they worship God was so powerful to me. And even being in, I was in Kentucky for seminary, and even a lot of the people who live in Kentucky look just like me. Mm-hmm. And yet even the differences that were so glaring to me when I actually began to understand even the culture of just a different state, even if they look like me, I'm like,
right.
We have very different ways of approaching this. And when I came back to South Dakota, I really began to see the beauty in my mm-hmm. own people, which is so crazy to even say, but, and just the ways that we worship God and the good sides of that and also the bad sides of that. Mm-hmm. And there's just this fuller, more beautiful picture that we miss out on so quickly and so often. And Ruth, I'm so grateful for the time. Again, Ruth's latest book is called When Striving Cease. Go get a copy. We'll have a link of that in the show notes. Ruth, where's the best way to find you, to follow you?
I hope to encourage and seek to encourage daily through my Instagram account at Ruth Jo Simons. That's RUTHCHOUSIMONS. You can find all my artwork and the products I hope to turn your eyes towards Jesus at gracelaced.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much again, Ruth.
Thanks so much for having me, you guys.
The Conversation with Adam Weber is produced by the Converge Podcast Network and proudly distributed on Faith Radio. Special thanks to these partners. For more information on this show, visit convergepodcast.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.